بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
لله الأسماء الحسنى ندعوه بها، لله الأسماء الحسنى ندعوه بها.
Thank you very much. My question is about what is the limit of the term freedom of speech? Because a church, you get it across the mosque, and they openly and clearly on their billboard across the road, the big words saying Islam's bane or Islam's nuisance. What can we do? Because, you know, I cannot tolerate it. Somebody is, you know, calling names to my religion. What can we do?
That's a very good question, and you know, this is actually something that I mentioned in a separate conversation. Usually when I talk about issues related to our mosques and churches, you know, one of the things to talk about is freedom of speech and the limits of freedom of speech. Freedom of speech means that the government cannot inhibit your freedom of speech. It doesn't apply to private parties. And oftentimes we think of churches, mosques, community organizations in this country as open to the public, and they may be open to the public. Our mosques, for example, or churches, that church may be open to the public, but they are still a private entity. So they, you know, they have their freedom of speech, and that means that the government cannot restrict what they can say. So unless, you know, that activity were to rise to the level of inciting hate, and there are certain you know, requirements of what's considered hateful speech. It has to incite hate, it has to incite a specific action, there has to be some kind of you know, imminent lawlessness. They have to incite imminent lawlessness, meaning like if their preacher at a Sunday congregation were to say, right after this, let's go across the street and commit such and such act, that would be inciting imminent lawless or imminent hateful action. Unfortunately, in this case, if it, you know, it sounds like it's just a billboard. There may be other ways to tackle it. I would recommend, you know, getting in touch with a local attorney or you know, a local care chapter maybe, and see if there may be some other way to trip up that action. So, for example, the city may have restrictions on how far back signs need to be placed from the road, or how high billboards can be, or how wide they can be, or how visible they can be. I mean, there may be other ways to get around it from a legal perspective. On the other hand, oftentimes establishing dialogue might be able to help in a situation like that. But in terms of, you know, answering your question, freedom of speech, it means that the government cannot inhibit their freedom of speech. And similarly, unfortunately, in this case, you as a private, you know, citizen or the mosque that you go to would not be able to inhibit that church's ability to you know, give that speech.
So to add on a couple of other things relating to that, this is similar to also what's said orally and over the radio waves. We have a horrible, here in this area, we have two horrible entities. One is called the Aramaic Broadcasting Network. It's based in Walled Lake, Michigan, which has, not primarily in Arabic, but even in English, some of the most outrageous stuff said about Muslims and Islam. That, I mean, I think that's all their spirituality is bashing Muslims and Islam. Then there's also the radio shows here. They have this Coptic preacher by the name of Zakaria Boutros, who says in Arabic, he said in Arabic, "Kan abil Islam min kamalut," for instance. Like he said in Arabic, he said that the prophet of Islam is from the people of Lut. So he said stuff like this. That's protected speech. He could say that. And then you can't even file, because I know I had someone come to our office and say, well, we need to file a defamation case because they defamed the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Well, you can't file a defamation case on someone's behalf who's been physically dead, you know, for over 1,300 years. You can't do that. The other piece is, the freedom of speech, there is the law and there's the reality. So for instance, legally, you could say, oh, I love Hezbollah. I love the Quds forces in Iran. Both of those are designated by our government as terrorist organizations. You can legally say that. However, Less than 2 months ago, you can go onto Detroit Free Press's website and look this up. The special agent in charge of counterterrorism for Detroit Gate spoke at this counterterrorism forum that was organized by the Jewish Relations Community Council here. I believe they're the one. It was the Jewish community that put this on. So you give them the ADL. And he was speaking about Dearborn and people from southern Lebanon. He said, well, if someone in there, if a sheikh in his sermon or someone's going around openly saying they like Hezbollah, we're going to open a case up on them. Or this is technically called an initial threat assessment. So yeah, there's freedom of speech. You can say what you want to say, but just understand there's consequences. That's just the current reality that we're under right now, and part of this needs to be is the whole situation with the repealing of the guidelines that were instituted in the former days of the last days of the Bush administration by Mukasey, former Attorney General, that opened up the door for these so-called initial threat assessments where people from a particular location or background this can be used, factored in, not sole reasons, but it can be used as primary factors of opening up like a threat assessment. So, I mean, just keep that in mind. And also, when you call overseas and you mention these things over your telephone, this could actually prompt a case being opened up on you if you start saying, you love Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, may Allah protect him.
Inshallah, we'll do a third question from here. This one I think everyone on the panel can talk about and also would like to talk about. So the question is, parents are concerned that lawyers cannot find jobs easily. What are the prospects for lawyers in the USA?
This question's been in the news a lot. I've noticed in newspaper articles and saying that there's a lot of people who are applying to law school, but there's no really jobs out there. I think it depends on how you look at it. It depends on the type of job you're looking for. There's plenty of legal jobs out there. If you're looking to work at, for example, a really big law firm and you want to get triple digit big salary. For a time, those jobs were declining just because of the market, but it's turning up now. I think honestly with this question, it depends on how you look at it. If you are smart in choosing what school you go to and making sure that your school is chosen in a way that you don't take out huge loans where you're trapped into having to find a really high salary job, this is not really an issue. This is usually an issue for people who don't really look at law school with a critical eye and make the decision with some backup plans and some strategies. So I don't think it's an issue, but that's my perspective.
Thank I would add, I'm going to say something that might be controversial, but I think part of it is to see why you or hopefully your child wants to go to law school. So hopefully it's not that the parents want the child to go to law school, but the child wants to go to law school. And then the question is why. If the idea is that I'm going to go to law school and I'm going to leave and I'm going to make a lot of money and then everyone in my masjid is going to be impressed by me, and everybody will have to call me X person Esquire, then I think, one, you may not reach that goal. It's very hard to get those jobs. Two, once you get that job, you may not be happy with that job because the stress of that job is very, very difficult. I know people who work in those jobs, and it is basically giving up the opportunity to be with your family, to contact people who are important to you. It's very, very difficult. So that's one part of it, is why do I want to be there? But if the idea is that you'd like to do a job that is in the legal world, that you think that you can, that will teach you, that will allow you to develop your legal skills a little bit, and you don't care that your salary is going to be X amount, then there might be jobs for people in that situation. I think the other factor also to keep in mind is how much am I paying to go to law school. So if I'm paying, if I have some scholarship money and I pay, let's say, $10,000 a year to go to law school, then that's not a bad investment at all. But if I'm spending, if I'm taking out loans, think of someone who took out loans to go to law school, if I'm taking out a large amount of loans every day or every year, if I'm taking out $60,000, $70,000 per year to go to law school, I should make sure that at the very least, when I leave, this is not going to suffocate me, my family, all those around me with the debt that I have. So any other questions in the audience? We have a few here, but okay, so we'll read them off here. If we could send a loud salawat for your brother Dawood Walid, because he really helped us out a lot and gave us a lot of valuable information. So this question, actually Dawood would have been helpful as well, but we're going to depend only on Brother Muhammad now. So the question is, does the Patriot Act allow searches without permission for national security purposes or the security of the country?
Because you know, in the interest of time, the short answer is yes. There's a number of troubling things about the Patriot Act, which you can read at length in our report, which we actually cover how this has been implemented, in particular with the Muslim community. But one example is the National Security Letter, which is a provision that allows the federal government to go to an entity and say that we don't have a warrant, but we have a national security letter, which means that it wasn't approved by a court or by a judge, but rather an executive agency, the FBI, or some other intelligence gathering entity or law enforcement entity, and they say that we want information. So one way in which this was used, for example, in the early part of the last decade was libraries were getting NSL, national security letters, where they would want to know all of the books that were checked out by a certain patron. You know, for example, if that person is checking out books about Mein Kampf, you know, Hitler's treatise, or books, I mean, I don't know, you can think of whatever you want, but anything that might attract scrutiny of federal government, libraries were getting NSL requests. Similarly, internet service providers were getting NSLs, where they were required to report the traffic of all of their users. In certain cases have been fought over that, but I mean, the short answer is yes. And unfortunately, oftentimes those NSLs, those national security letters, come with what's called a gag order, where even if the entity that receives the NSL, they are forbidden from disclosing it to anyone else. So if you receive an NSL, you can't tell, I mean, frankly, even your family, you can't tell the individual that it's about. But in the context of our communities, it's important that if you're ever approached with something that resembles a court order or a warrant, that you do seek the advice of legal counsel. Because even if you are subject to that, there may be restrictions on it, it may be tailored in a certain way, and instead of having to give up all of your information, there may be a way to do it safely and that, you know, tries to minimize the damage that would be caused by something like that.
Okay, one of our written questions is there a new law that anyone can be detained on suspicion for unlimited time?
That's another very good question. That is referring to the
A law NDAA. Had been signed just a couple of weeks back,
yes,
new law signed by the president.
Yes, the NDAA as part of the National Defense Authorization Act passed at the end of 2011.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, President Obama actually signed that, I think, on December 31st or January 1st.
Although he said that it will not be implemented in my tenure.
Right.
But it is a law.
Right, exactly. It is a law. He did issue a signing statement when he was signing that law saying that my administration will not implement this, but that doesn't carry the weight of law. It's a deeply troubling provision. Basically, it says that any person in the United States can be detained for without cause and without trial for an indefinite period of time. Literally, you can be detained without trial for an indefinite period of time. It's like, what could be worse than that? So that was a troubling law passed at the end of 2011. Muslim advocates and a number of other organizations have tried to push back, tried to get the community active, and across them, I mean, this isn't a law that's just affecting the Muslim community. It's any person can be detained. So, you know, working with interfaith allies, working with other civil rights groups, tried to push back. And I know a number of groups are actually pursuing legal challenges, you know, in relation to that. But unfortunately, that law didn't pass. It is a reality that we live under. But the struggle continues for organizations and groups and individuals to push back against laws like that.
One thing I would say that regarding this Muslim advocates, there's one point in my mind I want to share with you. Can you have this web page easily accessible to everyone, so you don't know what happened at what time, and they can have a live chat and live conversation as other organizations. And there is one organization here in it's working, it's expanding, that is called Prepaid Legal, and they say that we help you, although that is not real. They are just earning money and getting with a different name. So although they are doing wrong, can we do this, is organize this in a way that every man has easy access to this by telephone, by chatting, live chatting, 24 hours a day. So it's just a sharing with you about this point, to expand this thing. I know we are getting emails about legal 360, you said? No? Okay.
Justice
360. So we are getting emails in continuously, but everyone don't have any time to go through this. You peoples, you know better about that, and you are experts. So if we have access with you anytime, we can have be benefited with that thing.
I'll let Hadi discuss what the services that Justice 360 provides, and I know there is email.
And
that
one thing I want to add, sorry to disturb you. I don't say that it should be just voluntarily or welfare type. It, because you are also earning pupils of the society. You are full-time advocates. So there can be some fees or some reasonable things that it can be justified with you also. And community members can be benefited, and it will help both of us. Means the lawyers, attorneys, their earning part, and the peoples for their help in the justice.
That's a very good point. I can speak from the perspective of Muslim advocates. We don't have a live chat available on our website, but we do have a web form that anyone can fill out. No, that's a good point. There's a web form that anyone can fill out, and it actually goes to the inbox of a live person that is checked on, 24 hours a day, and we get those emails. You can also call us at any time. My phone number was up on that first slide. Our phone numbers are in most of our materials, and I have my business card with my direct phone number. If anyone would like to call me, feel free to do so. That being said, let me know about I can tell you about what we can do. If we can't directly assist you, at Muslim Advocates, we take on cases, for example, like the NYPD case, that have repercussions for people across the country. If we can't help you directly with your situation, we will do our best to get you to someone who can. We don't accept a fee for our services. That being said, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, like our Masajid, like so many other companies, organizations, like Muslim Congress. We don't charge for our services, but we do accept donations. You can go to our website, muslimadvocates.org, and donate if you believe this is a cause worthy of supporting. But again, you can contact us 24 hours a day through the web form on our website, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail, someone will call you back.
Yeah, I just talked for the financial side to that not only 1 or 2 persons could do that, you can develop a team of persons to do that.
I think there are a couple of things. One is, I think there's a sister who had a question, so we'll go to her. But just to finish off the point, I can't speak for Justice 360 overall, just because I'm not in that position. But I think just to give an idea of the work that hopefully it will do down the road, I think those are among the things that are its goals. I think the goals are to eventually be able to be accessible to people, allow them to reach you, and it doesn't have to be for a fee. I think if it's for a fee, then that changes the structure of the group. But just to give an idea of also the people who are working on Justice 360, usually it's people who are, almost always, people who have full-time jobs somewhere else, and to some extent are limited in what they can do. I'll give you an example for myself. I'm not allowed to do many things with Justice 360 just because my firm would say you're not allowed to. So Even this is very much stretching it. So I think there's a lot of limitations, but I think in the future, inshallah, Muslim Advocates obviously does a really amazing work, so I think it might just be that, you know, there would be no need for it because there's groups like that. But I think that you will see Muslim and Shia lawyers down the road aim to provide services like that. I think there was a sister, and then we'll go to the brother there.
Yeah, I just had a question about that law. What was the name of it? And if we want to help, I mean, obviously this is not something we want, what would you suggest as the best way to get involved?
So the law was the National Defense Authorization Act. And that's actually a law or an act that's passed every year by Congress. That's the annual funding bill that funds the U.S. Defense Department. And it just happened to be that this year, or you know, at the end of 2011, that law included language that allowed for indefinite detention. So, I mean, the law was the National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, of 2011. It was passed on either December 31st or January 1st of, this past New Year's. Interestingly, I mean, basically it was signed at that time because everybody was out partying and the news, you know, wouldn't be able to attract the attention that was necessary. But what can you do now? I mean, it's already gone through Congress, passed by both houses, signed by the president. What we can do now specifically on that law is, I mean, one idea is to talk to our elected officials. This is an election year. People, you know, elected officials will be out trying to talk to members of the community. And I'm talking about federal officials, your U.S. representative, your U.S. senator, if President Obama or Mitt Romney comes to your city, or other presidential candidates, ask them about it. You know, ask them what their position was, what their position is. Ask your representative if they voted for it or against it. Ask your senator if they voted for it or against it. And then, you know, when you hear about it, either from Muslim Advocates or the ACLU or CARE or other organizations, just try to keep that in mind and let people know that when there are points of action, I know for sure we'll make sure to let you know.
So, Angela, we'll end with one more question. Question.
Maybe we have the question, you know, if I get a visit from my FBI agent, whatever, right? Or any other incident. And if I want to contact you guys, how much is it going to cost me?
That's a good question. I think I mentioned in my presentation, you can contact us, we don't charge. If we can't directly represent you, we'll put you in touch with an attorney who can. Although, you know, I mean, these guys will agree, every attorney sets their own fees, but I know in this case about FBI interviews, most criminal defense attorneys do not charge for that first interview. Usually what happens, the way that process, I mean, to really break it down, what happens, when they come to your door like that, and if you get their business card, what you would do is you would either contact us, contact another organization, or contact an attorney directly and say, the FBI just came to my door, this is the contact information of the individual, and then the attorney will take it from there. Usually what the attorney will do is we'll call that agent and say, I'm contacting you on behalf of my client, this person, who you recently visited. I'd like to inquire as to the reason for this visit. And like Brother Hadi mentioned, oftentimes they just don't contact you again. But even that, you know, first, you know, that phone call, or even if they have to join you for that first interview, they usually, it's free of charge. For other matters, of course, every legal matter has its own charges and fees, but for at least the services that we provide to refer you to a local attorney, like I mentioned, we work with the National Association of Muslim Lawyers, our services are free of charge. Thank you.
So, Achille, I think that's it for us. If anybody's interested in seeing the legal bulletins that have been written over the past 2 years, we have a ton of copies here, and there's copies that we put on all the chairs. And if you have any other questions, feel free to come up to us based on, you know, what the specific question you have, and we'd love to help in any way that we can. So I'll end with one loud salawat.